All right, after all those hiccups, welcome to church today and Happy New Year. What? All right, we're on. Yay. Thank you so much for the music, guys. I really appreciated that. And I think it just really got everyone into hopefully the tone and the mood to reflect, which is the theme for this quarter, in fact. I hope you've all had a really great holiday season and had some time to hopefully wind down a little bit and just relax with your families and take a bit of time to slow down a bit, even though it's a hectic season. But it really has been a bittersweet holiday season and celebration this year. I mean, we've got the celebration of the milestone of a new year and, in fact, a new decade. But, of course, the bitter part, as has already been mentioned, is just the tragedy of our fires. And that so many Australians are in such a dire situation. In fact, I read this week that apparently the air quality in Canberra is currently the worst in the world. So just think about that for a minute. So I just want to encourage you to continue to pray for our country and do what we can in our means to support where possible. I am excited, though, to be able to share another New Year's sermon with you. And our theme for this quarter, as I mentioned, is reflections. So Yoshi will talk a little bit more next week about this and what you can expect for the next quarter. But I'm excited to kick it all off today. I do just want to say a prayer before I get into it, though, so just bow your heads with me. Heavenly Father, we just want to thank you for this new year. Thank you for the first Sabbath of this new year. And Lord, as we talk about reflections today, I just pray that you'll prepare our hearts just to search ourselves and just to let you in, Lord. So may your words be spoken in Jesus' name. Amen. We're living in quite an interesting time in history. My grandma always says to me, Nadia, if my mum or my grandmother were to wake up in the grave right now, they would fall right back into it from shock. People are walking around on the streets talking to themselves. They've gone crazy. Of course, she's referring to Bluetooth headsets. They've lost their minds. They're talking to themselves. They're staring at a little black brick. They would faint at the concept of people sharing basically their entire lives with the world, what they are eating, who they are with, where they are going, and their face, like, everywhere. I guess our current situation really is quite bizarre when you think about it that way. We live in the selfie generation, a generation that does a lot of reflection of their own image, a lot of reflection on how they look, how they appear physically to others, how their selfie looks. But beyond that, reflection on how their lives appear compared to others. Do I measure up? Is my car or house as good as this Instagram follower? Is my life as interesting as that Instagram follower? In fact, in recent years, this idea of presenting the best image of yourself has reached new heights. Take a look at a current trend that has emerged on social media. What I'm about to show are photos depicting people traveling. So there you go, you've got this girl on an aeroplane, hopefully on the way to a really exciting and exotic destination. But in reality, a toilet seat, come on. Here are a few more examples. So look at the travel photo on the left. So there you go, you've even got the beautiful scenery. But don't be fooled. Here's another one. So this one's maybe a little bit more obvious, but there you go again. And my favorite. A stool. So as you can see, people are really taking these things to the next level. But not only that, take a look at some of these headlines of Instagram stars and what they are willing to do to portray that perfect picture shot. So we have an Instagram star caught using other people's photos, when in fact he's a photographer himself. We have an Instagram model caught lying about her travel photos, which were heavily edited. And finally, we have an Insta sham. Instagram influencers' fake travel pics revealed when followers notice the same exact cloud pattern in all her snaps. Go figure. You see, we really live in a generation that does a lot of self-reflection, but it all mostly surrounds the exterior. And it is all measured in comparison to others. And you can see a certain someone, Android lover, helped me with my slides with the Samsung then. So we care so much about how our image and life looks to other people that we will go to great extreme lengths to manipulate their perception of our lives. This is almost considered a cornerstone to advance and succeed in society in this day and age, to climb up the ladder, so to speak. But what is really going on the inside of people's lives? The mundane, the loss, the anxiety, the depression, the struggles. And what about the true beauty, the quirkiness, the giftedness? All of that that's been suppressed, neglected, and sacrificed in favor of maintaining a certain exterior. We seem to have perfected the art of self-reflecting on our exterior. What is wrong with our image, with our external lives, and what we can do to improve that? But what is going on beneath the surface? What is taking place under the hood? You see, a car can only run and function effectively for so long if the parts under its hood are not assessed and attended to, no matter how well its exterior is maintained. The same can be said for our inner lives. The Bible talks about the importance of inner self-reflection in our journey as Christians. In 2 Corinthians 13, verse 5, Paul says to the church in Corinth, "Examine yourselves to see whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not realize that Christ Jesus is in you, unless, of course, you fail the test?" Now, Paul isn't talking here about a quick, cursory glance at ourselves. This self-examination won't work by having a quick glance at the person sitting next to you and saying, "Yep, I'm definitely doing better than them. I've been to church more in the last year. My children are more well-behaved. I definitely have it more together." No, Paul is talking here about a reflection on the parts of our lives that are deep beneath the surface, not the parts that can be self-managed and manipulated to other people's expectations and liking. Paul is talking about a deep and personal spiritual reflection, an honest reflection on the deepest and darkest parts of our heart and our beliefs, and how this relates and translates to our external reality as Christians. The Life Application Bible Study commentary puts it this way: the Corinthians were called to examine themselves to see if they were really Christians. Just as we get a physical checkup, Paul urges us to get a spiritual checkup. We should look for a growing awareness of Christ's presence and power in our lives. Only then will we know if we are true Christians or merely imposters. Quite a strong word there, imposters. You see, in other words, our experience, we have to ask ourselves, is our experience as real as being on a holiday in an exotic country where you are experiencing the smells, sights, sounds, the culture, the beauty? Or is our Christian experience more relatable to the picture of the guy posing next to a close-up of a juice bottle handle, pretending to be traveling? Another similar call to self-reflection can be found in Lamentations 3:39-40, which says, "Why should the living complain when punished for their sins? Let us examine our ways and return to the Lord." In a similar way to Paul's charge in Corinthians, this verse is describing a deep and honest interaction between instructive discipline in our lives and self-reflection. You see, often in life, we run from discipline, we run from difficulties, we run from the idea of stopping to really examine what is going on in our hearts. But God is calling us to stop and look at what's happening beneath the surface. In Psalm 139, verse 16, King David cries out to God saying, "Search me and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting." I love this passage. Not only is David showing a desire to really examine what's going on in his deep inner life, he's actually inviting God to examine him and reveal these things. David is wanting to know what is going on under the hood, the anxiety, the wrongs he has done, all of it. You know, sometimes we don't want to stop and reflect because we might see something we really don't want to see, something we really don't want to deal with. However, as these verses show, deep self-reflection and examination is pivotal to our spiritual growth. So what can you expect to happen when you stop and really look beneath the hood of your life? I want to spend the rest of the sermon talking about three things that can happen if we look beneath the surface and how it can really change the course of our Christian experience. So firstly, I want to talk about the first experience we may have when we look under the hood, which is that we take our eyes off others. Comparison is the killer of joy, as we have already established in the introduction of this sermon. But I believe it kills more than just our joy. It is the killer of our inner lives and often our spiritual growth. Jesus says in Matthew 3:7-5, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take this speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrites, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." There are two big problems that I see as a result of this scenario that Jesus portrays early in this passage. The first is that a hypocritical, judgmental attitude is actually used in this situation to tear other people down and bring oneself up. And the second big problem, which is a result of the first, is that the judgment of others acts as a distraction to looking under your own hood. A distraction from discovering the plank that needs to be removed. So what's Jesus' solution? Open the hood, look beneath the surface, have a look to see what is going on in the inner workings of your life and be honest with yourself. When you do this, the opposite of the previous scenario will take place. You will finally be able to address the issues in your own life rather than focusing on the issues of others. And instead of tearing other people down, you may find yourself building them up more. When I was in year 9, I had a deep moment of realization. I, for the previous couple of years, had tried to be a high achiever and tried to do well in school and tried to hit certain goals. But then I kind of realized that this whole time I had been comparing myself to other people and other people's best. And it wasn't really until I came across a quote in one of my Sabbath school, teen Sabbath school lessons once, and I cannot remember it word for word, but it went something like this. "Success is measuring yourself to someone else's best. Prosperity is measuring yourself to your own previous best." And I had this kind of deep, you know, teenage moment of realization where for one of the first times in my young life, I was freed to stop comparing my success at school, my popularity, my beauty, or anything else to others. And for the first time, I considered trying to stick to my own lane. I started to see things about myself I hadn't seen before, that I need to be more disciplined, that I need to stop judging the cool kids, so to speak, and realize that they may actually be more open and welcoming of my friendship than I realize. I developed more personal skills that year. I developed more friendships with a variety of people. I really opened myself to growth. But it started by turning my focus off others and looking under my own hood, being honest with myself. When we look under our own hood, we take unhealthy focus off other people. We don't have the time to judge or compare anymore when we realize how much we have to work on and honestly set out to grow. So the second thing out of three that I want to share with you today, when we look under the hood, we can face our fears and realize our need. We all have them there lurking beneath the surface, fears. John Eldridge puts it well in his book, Walking with God. He shares the story of a time when he himself needed to look under the hood of his old beloved car when the battery had died and he had jump-started it. And he started to see that the battery terminals looked a little bit corroded. What follows is a really interesting but so relatable interaction and experience, and I will read it straight from his book. He says, "As I unlatched the hood of my old 78 Toyota Land Cruiser and propped it open, I was struck by the fact that it had been a long time since I've looked under this hood. I had that nagging feeling, it's been a long time since you looked at anything under here. It's not a good feeling. That feeling of neglect and what might be faced here. The first thing you meet when you look under the hood of most cars is the radiator, the black boxy looking thing with a silver cap on top. Water and antifreeze go in there. It's how your car cools itself. And I thought, uh-oh, when was the last time I checked that water level? I couldn't even remember. Last summer, popping the cap off, I see no fluid. Yikes, better feel that. As I screw the cap back on, my thoughts turn to the oil. A deeper angst creeps over me. When was the last time I checked the oil? I couldn't remember that either. A sort of discomfort becoming dread fills my stomach like ice water. It's one thing to forget to keep your radiator filled, but by the time you realized you blew it with your oil, deeper damage has usually been done. Now I'm standing there knowing all this, knowing that I need to check the oil now, but something inside me hesitated. I didn't want to know. I didn't want to go there. I wasn't sure I really wanted the information lying at the end of my dipstick. I recognize this feeling. I have it around my checkbook. When was the last time I balanced that? I have it when I drive past the dentist. When was the last checkup? I have that sinking feeling around anything I know I've neglected, especially if this neglect has carried on for some time. And we do this most with our internal life. Wow. When was the last time you realized it's been too long since you looked under the hood? You see, we keep pushing ourselves at work, uni, school. We take up more and more and more, even beyond our capacity. And then when we do have time to slow down, we find ourselves with a quiet moment. We drown the silence with TV, social media, books, anything to stop us from facing the silence, to stop us from facing that deep, dark question. You know the feeling, I'm sure. I know I do. The feeling of constantly being on the run, afraid to face yourself or God, because you might find something that is just too much if you open the hood. And you just don't have the energy to face that. You know, John goes on to say something really interesting in this story. After he has a rush of relief, realizing that the oil is not dangerously low in his car, he says the following. I had been confronted with this part of me that is part coward, part hedonist, part magical thinker. This part of me that just doesn't want to be disturbed, not even when the information will save me later on. I see the same thing everywhere. It's universal. We don't want to have a look under the hood. We don't want to know what we desperately need to know. But over the years, I've learned a simple lesson. Pay now or pay later. Church, we can't hide from our fears forever. We can't patch up our brokenness and hurt forever. Eventually, we have to face what's going on inside. In the story of King David and his sin in committing adultery with Bathsheba in 2 Samuel 11, we see a good, strong, godly man fall into seemingly a moment of sin. One ill-thought-out decision. Or was it? Actually, from the beginning of the chapter, something seems a little bit off with David. In verse 1, it says the following. At the time when the kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. Quite an odd move. In a sense, David was abandoning his calling, his purpose, by staying home from war. I wonder what was going on under the hood. Maybe David was struggling with depression or anxiety. Maybe he was having doubts about his calling. Maybe he was distracted. We don't really know. What we do know, though, is that in the next verse, he commits adultery with another man's wife. It is the wife of one of the men who is out at war fighting for the country. And she falls pregnant. But David does not stop to consider what is going on inside. He doesn't take an honest look at himself. He keeps running. He brings Bathsheba's husband home to try and cover up what had happened. And when that doesn't work, he finally gives the order to his army commander, Joab, to allow the man to be killed in battle. Wow, how uncharacteristic of David. This psalmist, who we see in regular deep reflection before God throughout the psalm, suddenly plows through a series of terrible events without stopping once to reflect on what is going on inside his heart. How different things may have been if he had opened the hood back in verse 1 and come before God with his heart. We finally see him back to his reflective self in Psalm 51, where he pours out his heart to God in confession and forgiveness for what he has done. He knows he has nothing good to bring to the table at this point, so he lays down all that is under the hood and says the following: "My sacrifice, O God, is a broken spirit. A broken and contrite heart, God, you will not despise." Friends, it may be hard to look under the hood. It may be hard to face your deepest fears and needs. But one thing is for sure, looking now will be easier than looking later. And what things might you potentially expect to see when you open the hood and take an honest look? Well, some examples may be that you were struggling to trust God with your life, that you were struggling to trust others, that you have been in the wrong, that you are in an unhealthy place in your life and need to move on, that your relationship is not right for you, that you are afraid of loss, that you are not giving God access to grow the fruit of the Spirit in your life, that you are not experiencing a deep, fulfilling walk with God, that you are a few steps away from a major burnout, that you still haven't forgiven that person, that your heart is bitter, that you are hurt and broken. These are things that we need to face. But what happens when we open this can of worms? How do we even begin to deal with this inner life of ours? And that's where point 3 of the sermon comes in. When we open the hood, we find an opportunity to let God in. You know, it's quite easy to plod along in our lives and have a very active church life and even a devotional life, but still not really be letting God in to the deepest parts of our lives. And how is this? Well, because it is a lot easier for me to open my Bible and study the literary beauty of a passage, to unpack the interpretation of a prophecy, to dissect the meaning of the Hebrew and the Greek, to understand the correct theology of a passage, than it is to come before him and say, "God, I was in the wrong. I need your help to make things right. God, I'm struggling to forgive this person. Help me to forgive the way you do. God, I'm not reflecting your character. Please transform my heart. Oh God, I am paralyzed by the fear of what people think. Please help me to overcome the fear of man." Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with the previous approach of Bible study. And in fact, deep Bible study is pivotal to our Christian journey. But eventually, it must be combined with deep self-searching and honesty before God for it to translate into any meaningful growth. Otherwise, we are just studying and admiring a beautiful literary text. James says in James 1:22-24, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like." When we open the hood and take an honest look at ourselves, we are faced with what is going on inside, and it is like looking in a mirror. But we can either turn away and run and forget what we saw in order to shove the pain back inside, or we can let God in and lay it all before him. It is very tempting and easy for us to ignore the truth about ourselves and keep running. Why? Because we fear that we do not have the capacity to fix what is under there. We fear to come before God with all our brokenness, pain, and sin. We fear what we think he will do. But he does not look at you and me with criticism and judgment. He looks at us with grace with patience, with forbearance, with love. God doesn't bid us to look under the hood so he can point out our terrible faults and then leave us to fix ourselves. And then when we are in an acceptable place, then we can come back to him. No. God is a safe, protective father who takes us by the hand and leads us into that dark cave and is by our side every moment. When the shadows threaten to haunt and trouble us, he's there illuminating every dark spot, saying, we can take this road together. You don't have to fix this yourself. You don't have the capacity, but I do. Church, are we ready to open the hood? When we do, we may find that we will take our eyes off others. We may find that we face our fears and realize our deepest needs. And most importantly, we may find that we finally start to let God in more. When was the last time you looked under the hood? When is the last time you really slowed down and sat with God in his word to have an honest look at yourself? Maybe this is the year, maybe this is the decade, to make reflective time with God a priority and see him transform your life like never before.